Welcome to the Philharmonic Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:58 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is March 19th. And of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But first, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. And the week has generally been characterized by really quite bullish activity. The first 4 days of the week were consecutive days on the upside for a large number of these stock markets. And the last day, particularly for Wall Street here, was saw a little bit of profit taking, but these indices have all found, well, have held the majority of the gain that they've posted during the week, and that's really quite bullish activity. With that said, this has been five consecutive weeks to the upside for a large number of these markets, and they are a little bit overbought in the very short term. So while there is potential that we could see that short-term overbought condition unwound to a certain extent, I'm not anticipating that it's going to be anything really significant in here, for the simple reason that so many of these markets had been ranging for a prolonged period of time. They had, by and large, completed reversions towards their 200-day moving averages, which we define as the mean, and they are now pushing away from those averages once more. An increasing number of these markets have broken to new recovery highs, and again, no globally significant market has broken to new reaction lows, and all of that activity is characteristic of a consistent medium-term uptrend. So that is very much in our sort of best case scenario for these stock markets. In the commodity complex this week, we see that the oil market has been ranging mostly above $80. And it's sort of do or die here for the oil market. Some of these, the stock market patterns that we see are largely mirrored here in the oil market, where you've seen this ranging consolidation for much of the last six, even seven, 8 months. And it's up here testing the upper side of the range. And it really would need to sustain a move back below $80 to suggest that it's encountering anything other than a little bit of temporary resistance at the upper side of this range here. The natural gas market might check oil's advance because it remains really quite weak, and oil, natural gas is down here to $4, or it's at $4.15 today. It was as low as $4.05 earlier on. And that makes the ratio of oil to natural gas, it's pushing it out to really quite extraordinary high levels, and coming back, pushing back up to test the highs that we saw earlier last, or at some point last year. At this point, anyone who could switch from oil to natural gas has probably already done so, but it does suggest that with the supply that's coming online from shale gas in North America, that natural gas supply is not going to be a problem going forward. And anyone planning to build power stations, or anyone who has the choice between using natural gas and oil, would almost certainly be going for natural gas at this juncture. And that will, over time at least, detract from demand for oil in the medium to longer term. So that really is something to bear in mind, and that could check oil's advance over the medium term. Whether that is going to have any great effect in the short term remains to be seen in the oil complex. With natural gas coming back to the $4 level, and if one were to look at a 20-year chart, or as much history as you can get, you'll see that the prior base saw natural gas ranging in a volatile manner between about $1.50 and $4. Then we've seen some really quite extraordinary peaks posted by natural gas in the last decade. But $4 was the upper side of the base previously, and we've seen a lot of these commodities finding support in the region of the upper sides of the bases. So back here at $4 is a potential area of support for natural gas. And it will be interesting to see whether the changed fundamentals for the market will see it finding support at a and with at an historically high level. The shale gas, of course, isn't exactly cheap to get out of the ground, but it is economic compared to conventional gas. So the question is now where the gas price is going to find stability. In the precious metal markets this week, again, they were relatively strong in the early part of the week and encountered some profit taking on Friday, with oil, or sorry, with gold pulling back to test the $1,100 level. Silver was coming back to test 17. Palladium found support above the $460 level, and for platinum it was around 1600. So some of these precious metals are looking at sort of round numbers. And gold in particular remains in this ranging consolidation, mostly above the $1,100 level over the last couple of weeks, and all of it above the 10 or the $1,040 level. So this is an interesting area for gold, because if it can find support, particularly above $1,100, and sustain a move above $1,150, then that really would be indicative of the bulls regaining control of the gold market, and we could see it pushing back up to move on to new all-time highs if it were able to do that. But given the fact that it was down $20 today, it does need to firm up now into next week to suggest that is a realistic possibility in the short term. It's still a possibility in the medium term if gold finds support above the lows that we saw back in February. And I don't think anyone can realistically question gold's medium-term uptrend if it holds above the $1,000 level. $1,000 really should be a new floor for gold, given the fact that it is such a psychological area and that it took so long to move to get above it and has so far held it. So I think we don't want to see gold pushing very much below $1,000. Elsewhere this week, the dollar was comparatively weak in the early part, but firmed up in the last 2 days, particularly against the euro and also against the pound. But against other currencies, for example, against the Canadian dollar, it went down and had a look at parity and finished out the week a little bit firmer. And against the Australian dollar, it was well over 92 cents earlier on this week and finished out the week around 91.5. So it's difficult here to say that the dollar is a strong currency, but it's certainly strong, comparatively strong at least, against the euro and the pound. But both of those are congenitally weak currencies. One that really is worth watching is the yen. It remains relatively steady against the US dollar, but when you look at the yen against some of its other trading partners, so for example, against the Korean won in particular, then it really does look like we're going to see a weaker yen at some point over the medium term, and that would provide a catalyst for interest in the Japanese stock market. And while there has been a great deal of talk about which market to be in, Japan has been largely absent from that debate. But the small caps have been really quite strong over the last week. They're up on consecutive days. The second section tends to have these monochrome type moves where it just goes up day after day after day, and then when it turns, it just goes down day after day after day. But at the moment, it's in one of these bullish phases and has been up for a number of consecutive days at this point. So we're seeing bullish interest returning to the market, and those small caps in particular, they are the index is trading at well below its book value. So if we do see the yen starting to weaken in here, then that would produce I think a corresponding move in the Japanese stock market, which is a classic laggard here. It's one of the few markets that has really been able or been unable to improve upon its position from last year. So I think Japan really is something that is worth keeping an eye on in the short to medium term. And if we see the TOPIX banks in particular beginning to rally away from where they found support in the region of their March last year in 2000 and 2003 lows, that really would be a clear signal that something is changing in the Japanese market. And if we see the TOPIX breaking above the psychological $1,000 or sorry 1,000 point level, that again would be another clear signal that Japan was a realistic candidate for a catch-up advance, and it has plenty of catch-up potential, particularly considering just how far some of these other stock markets have moved. In the USA, you have the Nasdaq, which remains a global leader, both in terms of timing and in terms of its percentage advance. But also of note is that the regional banks, which are made up of banks that do what anyone would consider what a bank should be doing, which is taking deposits and making loans to small and medium sized businesses in the heartland of America. Well, those regional banks are moving to outperformance. And that's against a background of the S&P, which has pushed on to new recovery highs and which has done really quite well over the last year. So we're seeing that regional banks are doing better than an index that is going on to make new recovery highs. And that's really rather important because if that were not the case, if the banks were underperforming the wider market, we could begin to ask questions about the integrity or the strength of the basis on which these markets are rallying. But rather the opposite is happening. We have banks that are actually outperforming, and it's not just the regional banks. We have the S&P 500 banks sector as well, and the diversified financials are not leading, but they're certainly moving in the right direction, and that's supportive of the bull market hypothesis. With monetary conditions as extraordinarily accommodative as they are, banks really should be able to make money. And if they weren't, then there really would be big questions to be asked about why. But we're seeing that banks are beginning to outperform the market. And the other interesting sector are home builders. And home builders have bottomed. And that again is another interesting point. Now, I'm not anticipating that home builders are going to lead this market out of recession, certainly not. But the fact that you have home builders like Toll Brothers, which make sort of, as far as I know, relatively high-end homes, or Lennar Homes, or a number of others, the fact that they are forming bases, that they're pressuring the upper sides of those bases, is supportive of interest returning from people who want to buy new homes. And that type of activity is not consistent with a depression. So we have a nascent recovery in the US. We continue to have monetary conditions that are extraordinarily accommodative. So we're in a sweet spot right now for global stock markets because we have the economic recovery that's underway, not just in the big Asian economies or the economies that were less affected by the credit crisis, but we're also seeing that some of the economies that were worst affected by the credit crisis are also now returning to growth, and monetary conditions remain very, very accommodative. So this is a sweet spot because with that economic recovery, it is only a matter of time before the quantitative easing that has been put in place by the US, by the UK, by a number of countries in Europe and Japan as well as a number of others, begins to produce inflation somewhere. Now, we've already seen that inflationary pressures have filtered through to an extent into risk assets, and all of that money that has been put out there by the various central banks has found a home to a certain extent in risk assets. Now, you can look at the spread between the 10 and the 2 year for a number of countries in the chart library, but it can be broken down into two different groups. You have the USA, Europe, and the UK, and you could probably put Japan in there as well, that have monetary conditions at levels, or they have a yield curve that is steeper than it has ever been at any point in their history. And you have the other group, which constitute Australia, China, India, where they've been removing stimulus from their economies because that's where inflationary pressures are already beginning to rear their heads. Because we have these very lax monetary conditions, and we have plenty of potential markets that are either showing good value or high growth or are showing momentum moves, then we have the conditions where there is money available for speculators to invest in those assets, and that is helping to drive the bull markets that are out there. There also remains a vast pool of capital in money market funds, and that is also helping to fuel this bull market. So we are very much now in the wall of worry category, and that is at odds with the very real fact that this is a sweet spot for stock markets. Now, it's not always going to be the case, and when interest rates do begin to rise, then we'll know that what is currently a tailwind will be moving into neutral, and over time will move into a headwind. But we are a long way away from when interest rates are going to be a major headwind for stock markets. When we talk about things that we could potentially be worried about, surging oil prices is one of them. But that is currently not looking to be a threat. We would be worried about a collapse in the US dollar, but again, a collapse against what currency? And when you look at the problems that are evident in the Eurozone or in the UK, then it's unlikely that the dollar is now going to collapse against those currencies. Gold has been a major beneficiary over the last decade of a loss of faith in the value of fiat currencies, and that remains a compelling reason to have at least part of one's portfolio in precious metals, because they are a real store of value over the long term. But a collapsing dollar does not look like a realistic possibility right now, so that is also something that, whereas it could be a problem down the line, it's not a problem right now. And surging government bond yields. Well, UK yields are up there at 4% and a little bit more. That's getting into an area where they can begin to become a headwind for the UK stock market. But there are, I suppose, two points. It's only beginning. They're only at an area now where they could begin to become a headwind, and then that won't make much of a difference to so many of the UK companies whose businesses depend on the global economy rather than the UK economy. So, in terms of the effect that might have on the stock market, it may be relatively muted until we see interest rates and government bond yields getting really quite a bit higher than they are right now. But right now we're in an area where government bond yields are really quite low. So all of these things, where they could be potential worries down the line, They are not even at yellow warning lights in where we are right now. And of course, the other thing that could be potentially have been a worry was that markets had already run ahead too far. But the realistic proposition is that they had run ahead too far back in October, and they moved into these ranging consolidations where the vast majority of these indices held most of the gain that they'd put in from March 2009's lows. And those ranging consolidations are in the process of being completed. So this remains a bullish environment for global stock markets. It remains a bullish environment for Wall Street, and by extension, the global or the Wall Street leash effect is allowing that leash plenty of room, and we're seeing a corresponding outperformance of the emerging markets in this environment, particularly over the last year. Emerging markets bottomed well ahead of the major cap markets. They've had some of the best nominal performances. Their currencies are moving in line with the stock markets. This week also saw the Asian dollar index nudge to a new recovery high. It didn't hold it into the end of the week, but the fact remains that while the majority of commentary continues to focus on the relationship between the US dollar and the euro, the reality is that currencies in Asia and Latin America are outperforming either the pound, euro, or dollar or yen in no uncertain terms. And we are left with the proposition that global monetary conditions remain extraordinarily accommodative, and emerging Asian and Latin American currencies are appreciating. Stock markets are reasserting their uptrends, and the relative value play remains that we can expect the best performance to come from the big population centers of the world. The major theme of the last decade and probably this decade will remain the greatest urbanization in history. China has probably done a large part of its urbanization, but India is only getting started, and that's not even considering the large populations in the Middle East and in other parts of Asia. So urbanization, infrastructure, and providing the growing consumer, the growing number of or billions of new consumers with the things that they need and increasingly what they want, will remain a profitable enterprise for a considerable period of time. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.